Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, Yas here, and I just wanted to say it's great to have you join me today because I'm sure we're going to have another fantastic episode. So whether you're here for the first time or if you're one of the repeat loyal listeners of the show, I truly appreciate you. But before we get to today's guest, I just have a small favour to ask, and that's if you could just take a brief moment to hit the subscribe button if you haven't already. Ensure that you share it with all your coaching friends, and don't forget to get in touch, guys. Let me know your thoughts on what you think of today's episode or any of the recent episodes you've listened to. You can do this on Twitter at The Coaches Net. Once again, that's at The Coaches Net. And please make sure you do, as I'd love to hear your thoughts, guys. Anyway, on to today's show. I hope you enjoy it. Have a great day, guys.
The Coaches Network.
Hey, guys. You're now listening to The Coaches Network podcast, a podcast aimed at anyone who's passionate about athlete, talent, and personal development. My name's Coach Yas, and I'm a UEFA A-licensed football coach developer, and content creator. I'll be sitting down with a range of guests to discuss their journeys, their life lessons, and how you can make an impact. Enjoy. Right, guys, welcome back to the Coaches Network. My name's Coach Yas, and I've got a very special guest with me today. My guest today is Dean Thornton. Evening, Dean. How are you, man?
Hello, Yas. How are you, mate? You okay?
Yeah, very well, thank you. I'm really looking forward to this one. Dean, just before we get into the thick of the conversation, maybe just give a brief insight around who you are, what you do, and we'll go from there.
No problem. My name is Dean Thornton and I'm 35 years old and I'm currently the first team goalkeeper coach at Swansea City in the English Championship.
Amazing, amazing. Dean, I'm going to take you right back to your humble beginnings. Where did you first get involved in coaching? What was it about coaching in particular that kind of drafted you into this industry?
I'll be honest, it come out of absolute nowhere. I'd just been released from playing, so I played for QPR and I played for Wickham. I got released at 19, and my coach that was at QPR at the time, Steve Gallen, was actually the academy manager, still at QPR. And he found that I got released from Wickham, and he just said, look, I'm looking for a goalkeeper coach. It's something that you'd be interested in. I never thought about goalkeeper coaching in my life. I'd just been released as a player. I had enough of playing, in all honesty. I thought it wasn't for me in the long term. I picked up too many injuries and it was sort of me done sort of thing. So just out of nowhere, I got the chance to go back to QPR where I'd been as a kid. There was still a lot of familiar faces there, which helped. And I got thrown in pretty much straight away. Started coaching at 19 and 16 years later, I'm still in the game. So I'm obviously doing okay as we speak. Touch wood.
Awesome. But obviously quite interesting. Obviously you started off as a player. And obviously, there's a lot of discussions that do take place around whether that's of benefit to coaches going into their journeys. You also mentioned that coaching wasn't really on the agenda for you. So going into it at that point, there was coaching ever discussed at any point prior to that?
No, it wasn't. Like I've had all my coaches, managers. I was lucky that when I signed for QPR as an 8 year old, I had a goalie coach. I never knew I had a previous goalkeeper coach in the past, obviously come through grassroots football. And it's just something that I thought, I don't really know where I am in terms of my life right now. I was 19. I knew long term football wasn't going to be for me as a player. So pretty much was like, where do I go? Luckily, QPR offered me a part-time role to start with. So that was overseeing the academy goalkeepers. And then through working at QPR, I got offered a job with one of the coaches at QPR that owns his own coaching company that works in schools. So I sort of put that two together to bring an income in, basically. And then as time evolved, I think I'd done 4 years part-time at QPR, the EPPP program came in. So a lot of jobs were created. And I think it might have just been right place, right time, or obviously they liked the work I was doing with the goalkeepers at the club, that I got offered the full-time role of head academy goalkeeper coach. So yeah, like I said, in football, you sometimes do need a little bit of luck, right place, right time. And fortunate for me, I was in it. I lived and breathed QPR as a young kid anyway. I didn't support them. I supported Everton growing up, but I did have a big affiliation with QPR. I decided to leave actually as a player. I left at under 12s when I got offered another, a new 2-year contract. And it's the biggest regret I ever made as a player. But going back, again, like I said earlier, seeing familiar faces that people that I've been with 10 years ago still work, and I thought, you know what, it could be the right place for me moving forward. And like I said, someone like Steve Gallen, who's currently the sporting director at Charlton Athletic, massive influence on my career. I can't thank him enough for what he'd done to me growing up as a young kid, obviously him managing me as an under 10-year-old at QPR to being my manager again as the academy manager. And he sort of gave me license to run with it. When I first got the part-time role, I was told about a young goalkeeper that they thought really highly of. Literally my first session going in, I got pretty much told, look, this lad could be very good. And by the way, there's a lot of clubs looking at him. So you need to sort of be on your toes. So that was like thrown in the deep end straight away. I got to, his name was Liam O'Brien. He still plays now, but he ended up getting a move to Portsmouth at the time, that were in the Premier League for, I think, quite a bit of money. He ended up playing for England, I think, 17s, 18s. So literally one of the first goalkeepers I ever worked with, only for a couple of weeks, got a big move. So I thought, you know what, maybe being a bit, sorry, I still got sore throat still. Maybe in my head thinking, I've cracked this as a coach. I've already got one moved on, or a big money signed to the Premier League. This is easy. obviously, it's not that easy. So yes, for me, obviously, that's that worked with the part-time role, was going in, overseeing all the keepers, ranging from under sevens all the way up to even 18. So I was working with players that were 2 years younger than me, which obviously at the time is can be a bit strange. Obviously, the players looking at you thinking, I think I used to play against this lad like literally about 18 months ago. So that was obviously the hardest fit for me when you're a young coach at a proper club, a professional club. You're always going to be tested because obviously you're working with really, really good players. So if the session isn't correct or they don't think you're at it as a coach, I think obviously you get highlighted. But luckily for me, it's what I've been doing seems to have worked. And like I said, I'm 16 years later, I'm still in the game, touch wood. So yeah, all good so far.
There's a lot to unpack in there. You know, I'll start by, obviously you mentioned that, you know, going in, working with that goalkeeper who's obviously high potential. There's going to be a lot of people listening to this that probably haven't got much experience working with goalkeepers. What does a high potential goalkeeper look like?
Cool, that's a tough question to get thrown straight into. Again, it depends on the philosophy of the club. For me personally, I always look for someone that is very open and very good with their feet. That's because that's the way I like to play. Every coach has their own style, but for me, they have to be very, really, really good with their feet. And this comes with the basics, where obviously they're naturally a good shot stopper, very good dealing with crosses, very aggressive, dealing with 1v1s, very agile. Obviously, sports science now in the game's kicked on in the last 15, 20 years, where when I played, I never had a sports science coach. So I knew that from my side that I could have done a lot better with that. But having that skill set at the time, I didn't have. So now the modern day goalkeeper, they're absolute monsters. Like physically, they're specimens. Years ago, everyone used to say you've got to be 6'5", and that's the role of goalie. The goalie's changed. I'm 5'10" max. So I'm always a little bit biased when people say I have to be 6'5". You don't. You have to be good enough in the game, effective. That's the role of the goalkeeper. For me, the best ones now, you look how much the game's evolved from 10, 15 years ago to people like David Raya. He's at Brentford in the Premier League, then got called up to the World Cup, 6'6", but as a goalkeeper, so effective in the way he moves around the goal, so effective dealing with crosses. He's very aggressive. So they're sort of the keepers that I've seen in the recent years where I go, do you know what, that's not kind of the model that I want to work off. Currently, the keepers I've got at Swansea right now, two absolute different animals. I've got Stephen Bender, who's 6'5", but is just an absolute monster physically. And then I've got Andrew Fisher that's 6'2", and a complete different build to Stevie. But again, agile-wise, speed-wise, he ticks a lot of boxes. And obviously the way we play as a club, he ticks them boxes. But Stephen Bender this year has shown how good he is now, with his feet especially. He's kicked on a lot, and there's no real surprise that I've seen on social media, and obviously I see bits and pieces that he's now getting linked with Premier League clubs. And that's because of his work and his desire to kick on. So it's going back to your question, Yasser, it's one of working with people that want to improve themselves. You always hear quotes and what people want to hear, but like they say about if talent don't work hard enough, it's so true. The talent just gets you through the door. That's all it does. It gets you through the door, and it's about the top players want to carry on progressing as individuals, but also as players, and that's why you see players now coming out of League Two and League One that end up having a really good career in the Premier League. There are top players out there, but it's all about having the adaptability to obviously one as a person improve, but two when you get the opportunity, you've got to grab it with both hands. So for me, when I look at goalkeepers now, it's about having a one-to-one conversation with them and getting a feel of them to see where they think they are. Are they humble enough to recognise what they're good at, what they need to work on? But it's creating an environment and a culture that is refreshing for everyone. I've been in environments where you go into work every day and it's not always, how do I put this without swearing? It's not always great, but it's important that when you go into work, you have an environment, you know, every day you're going to try and make a difference to that goalkeeper, and that goalkeeper's going to help you back. Where sometimes you go into environments where it's not like that, and that's just football. But again, it's just part of your procedure as a coach and how you learn in different environments, different situations. I think I've grown in the last 5 years as a coach more than I have in the previous 10. And that's just from being in different situations, working with different players. Obviously, I've been lucky enough to work in the Championship now with some really, really good players. And like I said, I'm still only 35, and there's players that are a year or two younger than me. So in the last 5 years, I've learned a lot as a coach, working with these kind of players.
Do you think that development piece has come more from in age? Because obviously you talked about, you know, becoming a young coach yourself. We're seeing certainly in the last like 10, 15 years, maybe the age in which coaches are starting their journeys has become a lot lower, has become a lot younger. And then there's maybe that naivety that once they get, especially in academy football, where I've seen a lot of younger coaches as well, that feel like almost they've stepped into the academy environment, they've kind of made it, if you like.
Yeah.
What was that like for you, obviously, when you first started coaching?
So looking back now, Yasser, like, I think as a person, I'm really honest anyway with the people I work with. Looking back how I was when I first started, say 2-3 years into the journey as a part-time coach, and then maybe a year or two into the full-time role at QPR, personally, I know that I probably thought I cracked it in terms of I knew everything about goalkeeping. I knew everything about what they need right now at the time. And looking back now, I know that I was miles off it. So I remember when sports science obviously first came into the game, and sports science sort of took over at the time where the players can only do this at a certain amount of time. They can only train for this amount of time. And I used to have wars every day with a sports scientist saying, well, have you ever played in goal? And their answer was no. And I said, well, how do you know what he needs him? Looking back now, like the coach or the sports science coach had a lot more expertise than I did in that field. So I knew then that I needed to change. Now, as a 35-year-old, hopefully the sports scientists at Swansea say that I have changed. But yeah, I know that when I first was in the in the environment as a young goalie coach, it was, these are my goalkeepers and you don't do anything with them. That's just, they're with me. Now it's got to be for the benefit of everyone, whether it's sports science, whether it's the manager. Obviously, the manager's the most important person at the club. He makes decisions. But obviously, the other aspects as well, whether it's working with psychologists, obviously the physios, nutritionists, you've got to be really open. You've got to be really adaptable, especially when the higher up you go. If you're lucky enough to work in the Premier League, I know that some players have their own chefs. So if it's a goalkeeper and you don't know, you've never met this chef before, and he's feeding your player whatever when he goes away, but the goalkeeper's not performing, naturally people might turn around and go, what are you doing with your goalie? And you're thinking, well, have I actually made sure I know exactly what he's doing? But it has to be that trust element. And I think where goalkeeper coaches are different, it is a little bit more one-on-one. Obviously, the numbers in the groups, seniors, for example, you're probably working with four keepers in the session. Obviously, the outfield coaches, they're working with maybe 20, 25 players. So there is a bit more one-to-one element of the case. I think you have a lot more trust with the players. But for a coach, I know that where I was when I first started to where I am now, I'd like to say that I've evolved. I'd like to say I'm a lot better. But I'd definitely say, honestly, that I've opened up a lot more and I'm more acceptable to what people say and their opinion. And of course, you value it because you're working for the same goal.
You know, just on that then, it's obviously, you know, from my own experiences, I know that when I worked in academy football in particular, for me, it was like, well, I haven't worked here before, so there's going to be things I'm going to want to learn and develop. And it was a situation where it couldn't not make sense that actually we've got all these experts in the room. Why are we not using them? And obviously, you mentioned there that, you know, early on in your journey, it was almost like very territorial. Was there a particular moment where that shifted for you, where something happened or something, you know, something was sparked in you? Because, you know, I guess you don't just change your mindset without something happening first, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think what changed was when maybe not the EPPP, but we more courses come available. So I'd gone from playing to coaching at QPR straight away as a 19-year-old. Without actually going on a course. Then I got told, right, you need to your level two. Because obviously the level one I done when I was a YTS player. So then you get to a level two and then you get to meet people. And then like, as you progress through your coaching badges, like my goalkeeper A, for example, I was the youngest on it, I believe. But then I had people like Martin Margson, who's the England goalie coach. I had people like Ben Roberts, who's now the first team goalkeeper coach at Chelsea, just left Brighton to go there. Sal Bebo, that worked at Reading and was currently at Arsenal. So from experience, I think, I was really lucky that QPR were brilliant with me, with my coaching badges, in relation to, if I said I needed to go on a course, they would do it straight away. So the people that I got to know and got to meet had a lot more experience than I'd had in the role. And then as you go out scouting, as you go out to watch games, meet people, even like, for example, you go to watch Reading at the time, and Sal Bebo, who's for me is a great, great goalkeeper coach, he'd see you and come over and spend time with you. And at the time, I'd have maybe been about 23, 24. But Sal's obviously produced so many goalkeepers. Tony Roberts, another one, obviously the Wolves' first team goalkeeper coach. Like, I'm lucky that these people now I can ring first hand on my phone, send them a message, and they get back to you. So I think it's spending time with people like that for me, where I realised, oh, actually, like, I'm nowhere near where I think I am. And I think that's where you go back to the club and you reevaluate where you are. Again, going back to Steve Gallen always kept me on my toes in terms of, he was honest with me all the time. And I think that's because I had obviously a relationship before with Steve, but he always, if I ever felt I got above my station, Steve would swiftly put me back in my place. But again, it's always linked to culture and environment. If the environment's right and the culture's right, you should have hopefully a successful career as a coach, player, or just successful the club, whether it's getting promoted to the Premier League or if you're standing in the Premier League. So again, it's, I think that's when it first happened for me, where you go on courses and you meet people and you realise, like, he's, that fella there, for example, has had 500 league games as a coach and I've had none at the time. And you're thinking, okay, well, maybe what he is saying is not a gospel, because everything's different. It's always horses for courses. But yeah, I think maybe when we first started taking the coaching badges from George's Park, you realise actually, like, there are people here with a lot more knowledge than myself. And that's where, as a coach, you have to look yourself in the mirror and go, okay, right, this has got to change. Or I need to be adaptable.
So looking back now, then, obviously, when you first start your coaching journey, what kind of practice were you delivering? Was stuff that you'd been experienced as a player in the past? And how did that start to transition? Where did you, where have you kind of ended up now? Obviously, now working in the first team environment where, you know, the argument would be maybe that actually there's probably not as much room for technical development. Of course, there's obviously things you can refine and polish up. You know, where does the attention or focus go in terms of your sessions now?
Yeah, so I think obviously when I first started, it was obviously myself getting to know the role as a coach, where you're never really fully, I think the first experience I had as a coach was, you've got 12 goalkeepers, you've got an under eight who's the youngest and the oldest is 16. And by the way, you've got an 18-yard box to work in. So that was obviously the first challenge to go, oh, hang on. So then you're thinking, they don't want to use the same footballs. So you've got to work out that. You've got to work out who can, because obviously at 7, 8 years old, they can't strike it as well as a 10 or 11-year-old. So that was the first time you think, wow, like, as a coach, throwing the deep end now. so that's an area that you go, okay, right, so this is how they work. This is what I used to do. This is what I think, right. So I used to, when I first started, right, you plan your session. And I'll be honest, when I first started, it was purely what I used to do and what I thought was I enjoyed. Now, obviously, there's a lot more. I'm lucky that people are all over the club. You've got analysts now. You've got everything that you possibly need. If I need to find a clip of, for example, we play QPR actually this Saturday. If I need to find out the last 10 goals that QPR have scored, I can obviously look myself on platforms like Y Scout and other bits, but I can also speak to the analyst and go, Ben, I need these last 10 goals. So a working week, if it's a Saturday to game, I'll work, Monday will be a recovery day for the one that played. So they'll come out and it'll literally be a little bit of footwork handling, and then they'll go and recover with the sports science boys and the physios and whatever they need. So then it'll be a top up for the lads that haven't played, the other three goalkeepers. So they'll have a tough session in terms of, they'll be absolutely blowing, but it'll be maybe a little bit of technique for the ones that are the younger ones of the group, so the 21s, 22-year-olds, just to refine where they are. And then Tuesday, Wednesday will be the physical load for us as a group. So they'll get their repetition in terms of dives, in their load, how much power they've used, jumping, etc. Thursday is normally a down day for them, and then Friday is a match prep day. So obviously you're working on the opposition. But again, even Tuesday, Wednesday, I'm feeding off what the opposition do, whether it's the type of goals they score, the type of crosses that come in, or even you still, as a coach, you still work off your eye, you still work off what you think that player needs. For example, if I think Stephen Bennett needs to work more on his feet, I might adapt the warm-up or the first part of the session for his feet, where years ago it literally was, right, here's a warm-up, and it could be a jog, and then it's straight into volleys or straight into shooting. Now you're trying to break everything down as much as you can, where you're trying to link it to what they're then going to do with the outfield players. Where before, I think years and years ago, when I first started, it was, right, what are you doing? I'm going to do this tonight. What are you doing? Oh, we're doing this. And I think it was not maybe linked as it should have been then. But now everything's planned to a T. I know already for the next 2 weeks what we're working on as a club. And again, with when you're working in the first environment, it is a little bit different because it's, unfortunately, it is results-based. As much as your performance is the most important part, the lifespan of a manager is, say, 15 to 18 months. And if you're part of that backroom staff, the higher up you go, the more chances you've got of getting sacked. So, again, as you say, it's maybe not as much coaching as you want sometimes. It's maybe more managing. But you're always looking to improve your goalkeeper. So, like I said, I'm really lucky with my group that both of them are 24, the first two seniors. And then you've got the two 21s goalkeepers that come into our four. So it really is a young group in terms of where they are as people, but also as goalkeepers. And I'm lucky that, as I said earlier, the culture of for them, they want to improve all the time. They want to learn where maybe if you're working with a goalkeeper my age, 34, 35, they don't want to learn as much anymore because they come to the end of their career. But with Stephen and Fish, for example, they're always looking to improve. They're always looking to work on their part of the game. If you tell them to you need to work on this, they'll do it. If you tell them you need to work hard in the gym, they do it. So I'm really lucky in the current group that I've got, but I'm also lucky in the environment that Russell Martin and Matt Gill and people like that have set.
You've mentioned a few times around the idea of, you know, sports science and the physical performance teams, and you know the word that kind of really jumps out for me throughout what a lot of what you've said is collaboration. Historically, you know, we know some of the challenges that goalkeeping coaches face, or rather the integration piece. What does that look like for you? And you know, especially as an earlier on in your journey, did you find there was almost like a, I'm sure we've all experienced it in some way, shape or form, it's a segregation to an extent?
It's definitely improved. It used to be, you've got 15 goalkeepers, for example. Here's the worst balls out of the lot. Here's the worst area you can work in. For example, where QPI's train at Harlington, I was always in the area that had the least light, working in the evenings. I was lucky that the coaches that I worked with all the way through, I think I had a good relationship with them. So they would shout when they need their goalkeeper. You're putting on a session and 10 minutes in, sometimes the under 14 might get told he needs to go over. And then sometimes you're there for the whole 2 hours with the under 12. Now it's definitely more aligned. Speaking first and working with the first team, obviously it's one team, so it's a lot easier. Going back to see the academy, the goalkeeper coaches, it's not the same, but we need the goalie after half hour, and after 15 minutes they might call him in. So you've got to be adaptable. You definitely got to be adaptable as a coach, as a goalkeeper coach especially, because there's players coming out of your group into others.
Just on that then, though, is there any point that we, as a goalkeeper coach, you might turn around and say, well, actually, no, we need our 30 minutes or we need our 40 minutes that we agreed on?
I've had arguments in the past, yeah. and you can speak to the coaches that I work with. I'm definitely one for voicing my opinion, good and bad. If you get told you've got 40 minutes with a goalkeeper, you should get that 40 minutes, I think. Like if the outfield players say they need their outfield players for an hour, I don't think many goalkeeper coaches would go over and go, I need the centre forward or I need the midfielder. But that's just the way of the goalkeeper coach and the way of the world in football. But like I said, with us, we'll have morning meetings, not just about that day, but the week. So I know 9 times out of 10 exactly how many minutes I'm going to get, if I'm going to get an hour, if I'm going to get half hour. Of course, you get the odd bit where they might get called 10 minutes early. But that's where you're adaptable as a coach and you're flexible and you can go, look, do you know what? You can go, but I know I need to do work with the two keepers or whoever it is after. So, but I think we're more integrated now as coaches as well, where before, especially in the academy, you were the goalie coach, so you'd probably stand by the goal and you'd watch the outfield session, where I'm lucky with the manager I work with now, who I've known since I was 15 years old, who'd come over to me and say, what's your opinion on this? Or recruitment, for example, Dane, what do you think on this? And it wouldn't just be goalkeepers, it would be outfield players as well. So, of course, naturally you go towards the goalkeeper when you're working in a session because you're trying to help them and give them information from our end. But there's always times where the manager and the assistant manager say to me, look, what do you think of this on working with the left winger, for example, or if you're working with the 2 8s, what do you think on this? So I think I speak about culture and environment a lot. And I think it's because where I am now and working with the manager at the last two clubs, I've seen it firsthand where you go into a club and it's, talk about MK Dons now, where you go into a club and it's obviously not where we think it should be as a club, to having that pathway where you think you've brought in the right players for that club, the right philosophy. And I think it was no coincidence that the manager then got picked up by Swansea, and Swansea obviously took the manager, and Russell brought the backroom staff with him who he knows and trusts. And obviously that season at MK Dons, they ended up losing the playoffs or getting right amongst it. So I've seen it firsthand, and I'm going through the cycle again at Swansea, where it is a process. It does take time. If you get the time, which I think we will at Swansea, touch wood, I think as a club we'll definitely move forward and we'll definitely develop players. So again, it's having that time to progress, not just as a coach, but as people as well. Like, I'm still 35.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Still really young in the game. I don't know off the top of my head, but I imagine I'd probably be in the top three or four youngest coaches in the Championship. So as a coach, I'm still a baby. Even though I've got 16 years experiences working from under eights to first team and even international with Taiwan, I'm still a baby. I'm still learning. I know where I am as a coach. I'm nowhere near the finished article, and that's working with players, luckily, like Julio Cesar, Rob Green at QPR, Paddy Kenny, people like that. I know I'm nowhere near the finished article. Really, I'm just starting. So yeah.
Just on that then, you know, you just take a step back a little bit. What would your advice be to some of those coaches who are out there listening, says whether they be goalkeeping coaches, from a goalkeeping coach perspective, about how to maybe become more integrated into the wider, you know, into the wider team, especially working closely with the outfield coaches, but maybe some considerations from the goalkeeper, from the outfield coaching perspective, of the importance and how to maybe integrate the goalkeeping coach more effectively?
Yeah, I think it's just having the open dialogue. Like, I hear all the time in academy football, or any football, last goal is the winner, or next goal is winner. As a goalkeeper coach, from a psychological point of view, you're always going to have one goalkeeper unhappy every session because he's let the goal in. So I've said to the outfield coach before, why are we doing last goal? Why don't we do 10 passes? Why don't we do next save wins? Because every session, whether it's grassroots, academy, under 21s, even first team, next goal's the winner. Well, then from my point of view, I've then got to deal with a goalkeeper that's got the arm because they've let in the goal. So I think that's where you learn the role as a goalkeeper coach, especially, is understanding where you are from a five-corner model. Having that open dialogue with coaches to express your opinion and honest opinion, but also to be honest in terms of when they give you their feedback, to take it on board and go, you know what, okay, right, I get it from your point of view. So when you're linking it back to starting coaching or getting into coaching, I think have a really, really open mind, because you'll be at one club one day, and in the space of 10 minutes, a manager, the first team manager, could be sacked and the philosophy changes completely, even though you've been there 2-3 years and you believe that's the right way of playing. A new manager comes in, they might rip up the whole structure of the club. So that's where I think you need to be really open. Get on the grass as much as you can as a coach. Try things. I think the best coaches know where they want to be long term. Whether you want to be the best under 10 coach in the country and you think you're designed for that and that model, or if you want to be a first team coach in the Premier League, have an ambition of where you want to be. But I see a lot where I've got to do this badge, I've got to do that badge. Why don't you just be an expert in your field? I know for me personally, I don't ever want to be a manager, ever. I don't ever want to be a first team coach in terms of an outfield coach. I just want to work with goalkeepers, and that's where I am right now. If you'd have asked me that 10 years ago, it would have changed. I'd never wanted to come out of academy football. So it does change, but again, that's having your ambition. So my, as a goalkeeper coach, I want to be the expert of that role. In 10, 15 years' time, if I've had the opportunity to obviously continue working with the senior outfield players, I might then want to change. But I think it's knowing where you are at that time, rather than if you join a club as a new coach, you want to climb that ladder straight away and be the first team coach in the space of a year. It's never going to happen.
100%. I think it's really important you mentioned it, because obviously, you know, you're having your idea of what it is that you want to do, but also having really clear clarity on that as well. And I think for a lot of coaches, sometimes they go into roles thinking, oh, I just want to go and progress and progress and progress, and which is great, you know, like you said, horses for courses, right? But I think it's also important to recognise, actually, progression for me might just becoming establishing myself as an expert in this field.
Yeah.
Rather than necessarily jumping from one role to another role to another role, you know, presumably progressing up the hierarchical ladder, if you like.
Yeah.
You know, obviously now you're working in the first team in the Championship. We talked about the start of your journey, looking at, you know, coming into the academy football and eventually getting that full-time role at QPR. What happens in between that?
Yeah, so I spent just over 9 years at QPR. I loved it at the club. Towards the end, the last, say, year or 18 months, I probably didn't enjoy it as much as I could have or should have, for a number of different reasons. And then at age 28, I got offered the opportunity to work for Swindon Town. And at that time, they were League One. And it was to go to the first team, to be the first team goalkeeper coach. Spoke to a few people at QPR and said, like, what do you think? And they said, look, if you go across now, like, it's a young group anyway at Swindon. And there's a couple of players that I've worked with previously that are at QPR as youngsters. And I got told, if you go over now, like, you'll be the youngest goalkeeper coach in the Football League. And I think naturally as a person, everyone's got an ego. And I said, you know what, like, I fancy that, to be fair. I'm gonna make the jump. And I think if we didn't have the last 18 months at QPR as it was, I probably wouldn't have gone. But I decided to make the jump. And I think it's the best thing I ever done. In terms of developing as a coach, when you're in the academy, results, in my opinion, don't matter. Again, if you'd asked me that when I first left QPR, I said the opposite. Oh, it's all about winning. But they don't matter, and that's the truth. So then you're competing on a Saturday or a Tuesday night. There could be 6,000, 7,000, 8,000 there, sometimes more. And it's all about the 3 points. So that's where I first obviously learned that side of the game. I was at Swindon for 2 years. I worked with some brilliant managers, some brilliant players and brilliant people. I got to work with obviously Luke Williams, Dave Flitcroft, Phil Brown. And then I struck up a really good relationship with obviously Matty Taylor, that had an incredible career in the Premier League with the likes of Portsmouth, Bolton, West Ham. And we speak to this day still. And I got the opportunity to, when Dave Flitcroft left to go to Mansfield, Matty Taylor got the caretaker role, but he was still playing. So I actually stepped up and helped him in that role. So I'd been about 30 at the time then. So I got an opportunity to do that, which was different. And then out of the blue one day, I was on my way to training during pre-season, and the manager from Taiwan rang me. And said, look, you've been recommended to me by someone I worked with QPR, actually, a fellow called David Rouse, that was at the time just gone to Man City as working in talent ID for them with their recruitment and goalkeeping. And he said, look, do you fancy being a Taiwan national team goalkeeper coach? And I said, off the bat, no, I've got no interest at all. And he said, OK, well, this is the money. And I said, OK, well, it changes everything. So I literally got told, this was a Thursday conversation. He said to me, look, if you are interested, we want to take you. So I went into work that morning, thinking of, if honest, thinking it was a bit of a prank call, because I've never heard of the manager before. And what he was talking about didn't really add up. And then I got a phone call again that night to say, have you told Swindon you're leaving? And I said, well, no, like, I've got a notice period with the club. I haven't got anything in writing to say you're offering me a contract. I then got an email over. And then on the Friday, I went in to see Phil Brown. And I said, look, I've got an opportunity on this. This is the money. What do you think? And I had a really good relationship with Phil, and I still do. And Phil said to me, look, I'd love you to stay. I understand if you want to leave. And I said, okay. And he said, look, you do realise you're a 30-year-old that would have coached Academy, Football League, and now International at 30. And I was like, okay, like, I didn't think about it at the time. And he said, look, if you want to go, I'll let you go. And he said, the only thing I ask for is you take the last pre-season game with me tomorrow. And I said, okay. So I did that. And on Sunday, I flew out to Taiwan. And if I look back now, it's probably the worst thing I ever did. It wasn't what I expected. Luckily, I was only there for 3 months. As I said, I had 24 hours to really think about the role. Obviously, coming from England, we are a little bit spoiled with the FA in terms of the facilities, with what they offer, the kind of players we work with. Going into Taiwan, as I got there, straight off the plane, I had to do a coaching session with the players, which is fine. Speaking to the assistant manager that I got on really well, a fellow called Lou Lancaster, he then told me there's no professional league in Taiwan. The players are either college players or the better players playing China or Japan or Hong Kong. I was like, okay. So thinking right now, I'm an international coach, so to speak. I'm thinking, right, I'll have a month in Taiwan and then I'll be back home for 6 weeks and I'll be back over again for the next camp. And I thought that's how it work. When I got there in, I think it was August. No, it was earlier. It was June, because pre-season. Got there in June. I told my missus, I'll be back in a month. As I got there, they said, yeah, next time you'll be home is December. So I was like, okay, so that's 6 months. So then we went to the Asia Games and competed in Malaysia. I think it was Indonesia, sorry. Went to Indonesia, was over in Japan for a month as well. But then something never smelt right in Taiwan. And this is where, as coaches, you need a little bit of protection in terms of the LMA and stuff like that. I got told that there's an election going on in the country. And for whatever reason, the government that are in charge are going to lose. And the government are coming in, they're going to appoint a new first team manager for Taiwan, which I found strange because even before I got there, it's the best run they've ever had, the highest they've ever got in FIFA rankings. So when I got there, I think they'd won 6 or 7 on the bounce and seemed to be doing really well. I then find out it's a political matter why they wanted to get the manager out. The manager then got offered the Hong Kong job. And he said to me, look, I can't take you straight away. I want you to go and work in Japan. And I was like, I'm not really interested in this. Like, I've left the League Two club at the time, and I'm now being told, look, pack your bags on your own. You're going to Japan to work at a club team there. And it this wasn't for me at all. And I'd said, look, that's not for me. But then when the manager resigned to take the Hong Kong job, all our contracts, so the assistant manager, myself, sports scientist and physio, our contracts were linked to the gaffers. So because he resigned, all our contracts become void. So we got no payout at all. So I was there for 3 months. I signed a 3-year contract. I was there for 3 months. I got paid the 3 months I did. That was it. And then by the time I obviously come back in August, Football League had started. Obviously, everyone was in a job. So I was at a point of view where, what do I do? Luckily for me, when I was in Japan, knowing what's happening, that I'm potentially returning home, I just went through my phone book one day and I spoke to an agent at the time that I knew and trusted, a fellow called James Featherstone, who owns a company called Omnisports. And I said to him, look, this is where I'm at the moment. I'm coming back from Taiwan. Like, first of all, like, my question was, do you know of anything going, coaches-wise? And he said straight away, look, it's the luckiest day you've called me. I went, oh, go on. He went, because the company's based in Manchester. He said, I've just opened the London office today. And he said, would you fancy working for me, sort of not as an agent, but more as football recruitment. Obviously, with the knowledge and the network I had, would you like to work for me? And I'll be honest, I come back to England and I met with Feathers, James. I said to him, look, I have been offered an interview and I got offered the Charlton Athletic Academy goalkeeper job, again, through Steve Gallen, that I obviously knew really well from years and years ago. So I had the interview there with Charlton and the people there, and they were brilliant. Got offered the job and I turned it down. I went down the route of Omni. I think what people don't see as a coach is your holidays in May and June. That's it. You miss a lot of things in life. You miss your friends getting married. You miss parties. Do you know what I mean? It might not sound big, but it's a collection of everything and you miss a lot. So,
doesn't it?
Yeah. I decided to go down the agent route and I did it for a year. And I loved it. I loved it in terms of that I could do whatever I want in terms of I didn't have to be in a training ground at 8 o'clock in the morning. I could do what I want from a daily basis in terms of because Feathers was based in Manchester, he knew I'd work hard, but I had no one really to speak to in terms of like, just get on with your day. So I got to go on holiday in Australia at Christmas and bits and pieces like that, which you never do as a footballer and you never do as a coach, which I really enjoy. But then catch 22 was I never had any structure where before I'm used to you being here at this time. You've now got to be at this meeting or you now got to coach at this time, where before it's literally make your own day. And if I'm really honest, I really, really struggled with it. And I really struggled with thinking, right, I know these players at these clubs are they'll easily sign for me and the agency. And there's so many agents out there compared to players. You're fighting for everyone. And I really struggled with that. And then luckily, out of the blue, I went to meet a goalkeeper that I worked with at Swindon, a fellow called Simon Moore. And he said, look, I'm at Bisham Abbey with MK Dons. Come meet me for a chat. So I went to Bisham Abbey to see Si, as Stuart Moore, and Russell tapped me on the shoulder, and I forgot completely about Russell, that he was there, and obviously I played with Russell as a kid at Wickham. Had a conversation, literally 10, 15 minutes, and about 2 or 3 months later, Mr. Moore rang me and said, your mate's got a job at MK. So I just text Russell saying, like, brilliant, congratulations, wish you all the best sort of thing for the season. I think my phone went about 10, 15 seconds later and said, you know, I'm calling you about you. I want you to be my goalie coach. So then after speaking with Omni, and they were brilliant, they said to me, if you want to go down the coaching route again, no problem. We'll let you go sort of thing. And end up spending 2 years at MK, sorry. And obviously the last 18 months, I'm lucky enough that I got to go with Russell again to Swansea. So, like I said, it's been an interesting journey. It's been a strange journey. And in the previous, 5 years, I've had 4 clubs, where in previous 11 years, I've only had 2. So it's changed a lot, but that's football.
Just on the here and abroad as well. Would you say, you know, having looked back now, probably your biggest learning points?
Sorry, I didn't catch that. So my learning points.
Yeah, your biggest learning point, you know, on reflection.
I think as you grow up naturally, you're open to the world more, you understand the world more. I think if I had my time again, I wouldn't have gone to Taiwan. As much as I loved it out there, I didn't know the manager and I didn't trust him personally. And that wasn't because of him, that's because I didn't know him. But I found it strange that my first session there was the plan is we're all going to go to China and work in China in the club team. And I'm thinking, I've joined Taiwan to be the national goalkeeper coach, not to work in China. So I found that strange from day one. I think it's obviously getting to know your environment you're going into. As I say, the grass always isn't always greener. It's definitely not. You hear all the time, like if you're an under 15 coach at, say, I don't know, Crystal Palace, there's an under 18 job going at Charlton. I need to go there. where sometimes you're better off staying at where you are, understanding where you are valued as a coach.
Just on that then, though, you know, it's an interesting point, because that probably would hook a lot of people in terms of jumping ship, right? Yeah. But, you know, obviously we're speaking in reflection in hindsight. What would you say that, you know, if you could go back to that moment then, might be some of the questions that you might ask of yourself to really establish for yourself, actually, is this the right thing?
Yeah, well, I think I'd have gone in detail more of my contract, for sure. It literally was an email, and he kept saying to me, or the Taiwanese government kept saying to me, look, just get it signed, just get it signed, just get it signed. Looking back now, like, I was 30 years old. I should have probably contacted people in the game that I knew, where, like I said at the time, your ego maybe takes over a little bit and you think, look, just get it done. And obviously the value of the contract was good enough for me to leave a League Two to go and pursue this. Definitely have people around you know and trust that, especially in the game as well, that maybe have done it. I think it's not new now where people go abroad from England as coaches and even as players, where 10 years ago it probably was a little bit more strange. Like, everything was the Premier League, the Premier League, the Premier League. So this was, what, for me, 5 years ago that I went to Taiwan. Even in them 5 years, the amount of players and coaches that have now gone abroad, I think it's a lot easier. And I think it might have been just the wrong place at the right time. As I said earlier, I've had a lot of luck in my journey anyway, where I have been in the right place at the right time. Maybe for me, this was the wrong place, wrong time. So I'd have definitely delved more into that experience from what I was going into. What I loved about Omni Sports with the agency was, because of the contacts I had in the game, was understanding how the game works without being a coach, if that makes sense. So where before you're thinking, when you see players come in, why are they unhappy? Why are they speaking to this agent? What are they being told? Where when I was on the other side of the fence, I was seeing firsthand from agents what they were telling their players. And I think what I tried to do from an agent, so to speak, was I wanted to go down the route of the coaching background I had, where maybe you're not right for that club because of the style of play, or I know there's a boy 2 years above you or 2 years below you that they think really highly of. I don't think you're going to get enough game time. Where players don't want to hear that. Players want to hear, I want to sign for an agent because they can get me a pair of boots and a better contract. And I think I was lucky at Omni, where Omni understood where I was coming from, and they backed everything I did. Where I know there's agents out there, don't get me wrong, there's some really good ones in other companies, but there's some horrific ones as well. And I think when you see a lad sign for another agent that you know hasn't really got much real integrity for the lad, they just want to see what he's getting paid, what they're going to get. I was trying to go down the route of, right, I'm developing this player for this pathway because I know the goalkeeper coach, for example, of that club has an expertise in this side of the game. If I can get him there, the longer term picture is in 3-4 years, he might come through to first.
With the player's best interest at heart, isn't it? And you're trying to make sure that they're in a good position, because ultimately, if they're in it for the long haul, then yeah, it probably, you know, that's for you adding more value to an extent.
Yeah, and one of my first meetings was with a young lad and his parents. And I sat down and the dad said to me straight away, he's speaking with 3 other agents already. I went, okay, that's fine. Like, that's normal. Them 3 agents have offered me X amount of pounds for my son to sign. And I went, okay. I went, I don't offer you that. I went, that's not Omni Sports, the company. And 2, like, if you think I should be paying for your son to be with me, then in my opinion, we're already off on the wrong foot. I went, I'm trying to improve your son. I'm not trying to help you financially as a parent. If everything works, I'm sure your son will look after his family anyway. But when you're dealing with players that parents are trying to get involved financially, it brings a lot of pressure on the lads. And I think that doesn't help at all. So that's where I knew maybe long-term, right now it wasn't for me, that side of the game. Who knows, in 10, 15 years, if I do want to come out of coaching, will I maybe go down the avenue again? Possibly, I don't know. But that's part of being in football, I suppose, seeing the other side of the game.
100%. Obviously, Dean, you've got quite a wide range of experiences, both obviously within the coaching perspective. You've had an insight around what it looks like to be a player. And now having kind of sat on the other side of the table of those, you know, those kind of agent player conversations as well. You know, what would your advice be to maybe some young coaches listening to this thinking, right, maybe all agents aren't so bad, and is there ways that we can kind of work together collaboratively with agents potentially just to support the young players?
There definitely is ways of working with the agents. I've got some really good relationship with agents now. And the best ones are the ones that generally understand the game. So what I mean by that is they haven't had to play in the Premier League for 500 league games, whatever. They just understand where their client is, as in terms of where they are right now in the game, and also where they're pitching their client. So like I have so many times where, even now, like I get a phone call from an agent, oh, we've got a goalkeeper that will fit your club perfectly. Okay, what's he good at? He booms it a mile. I went, do you watch how we play as a club? Oh yeah, like he can play as well. I'm going, you're just pitching your player because you know me or whoever. I went, that's not helping your player at all, because your name then goes around, oh, they're pitching this player here, they're pitching that player there. Where if you have a proper link with an agent, and the best agents are one that understand the club, they understand obviously the financial aspects of each club, so they're not pitching their player where the player might, I don't know, for example, 100 grand a week. You don't pitch your player on 100 grand a week to a League One club, where you'd be surprised what you do here and what emails you get. So 10 years ago, the coaches and agents, no, you don't get involved. Where unfortunately, or however you want to look at it, agents do have a big say in the game, a big, big say. And the best agents are the one that their first question isn't about money. Their first question is about, is my player going to get a chance to show what they're good at? And that's where the link happens. I've probably got two or three agents in my phone book that I know and trust, that their information I tell them regarding their client will stay between us. And the same back, where they ring me and say, look, I've got an issue with this player. What do you think? Can you keep an eye on him? That's where you go. Do you know what? He generally cares. Where you have agents that you'll never ever speak to, and you could have the player 5, 6, 7 years. You've never ever spoken to their agent because they just think he's just a number. The player's just a number. So yeah, I think there's definitely a place for it. Obviously, you've got to be careful in what you do as a coach, because obviously you hear these stories of people getting paid off, and that's just a no-no. It doesn't work like that. You're a coach. You're trying to develop the player on the pitch. You're not trying to gain any financial gain or anything like that. But yeah, there's definitely a place for it, because it's obviously helping the club.
No, definitely. And I think it's just good to kind of get that insight as well. And I think the biggest thing that you kind of really unpacked throughout the whole conversation is just how important it is to build those relationships, whether that be with players, whether that be agents, whether that be the academy manager, whoever else, you know, that you're kind of interacting within the game. Even the guy from Taiwan, as an example. I'm conscious of time. So I guess, you know, on a final note then, you know, if there was that one piece of information, or maybe like a golden nugget, if you like, for coaches to kind of think about, taken out from your own journey, what would that be?
Good question. That's a good question. I would say evaluate yourself as a person, and evaluate yourself as a coach. And what I mean by that is make sure you're doing everything right for the right reasons. Obviously, it is a job. You have family, you have a mortgage, you have got to pay bills. But it's, as a coach, especially the goalkeeper coach, because like I said earlier, it is so much more one-to-one, hands-on with players. Is know you're doing everything possible for that individual or that group of keepers. And just being really honest with them, like, you, the best coaches can sell to a player, you're not playing today because of X, Y, and Z. Player's not going to be happy, we know that, but just remember, it's never personal. As much as they might think it's personal, you're just trying to do it because you think that's where they are right now. And obviously, it's the manager's decision who he picks. You don't pick the team. But yeah, just being honest with yourself. And I think if you go into coaching thinking you know it all, you'll get found out really, really, really quickly. And if you think you're better than someone that's come through, if you're a coach in the academy and you think you're better than someone that work at grassroots, it means nothing. You're still the same coaches. You're just working with different players. It just might be that the person in the academy was right place, right time, like I said earlier. I know I was. I was nothing special when I first started. I'm nothing special now, in my opinion. But it's understanding what you're doing, why you're doing it, and is it beneficial for them players.
Amazing. Thank you very much, Martin. Really interesting conversation. Like I said, getting a brief insight around all your different experiences. And the final point there, I think honesty is the best policy. I think coaches being able to hold themselves accountable and recognise that we're never the finish arc, when I guess the moment that we start to believe that is probably where we get left behind.
Definitely.
100%. Dean, again, thank you very much for your time this evening. Really appreciate it, man.
You're more than welcome anytime, yes, sir.
Well, there you have it, guys. Another episode of the Coaches Network podcast, where our aim is to bring the world of athlete, talent and personal development together to just one platform. And you can help us with that mission right now by sharing this episode or any of your favourite episodes with everyone that you can think of. You can tag us in those mentions as well on Instagram at The Coaches Network or on Twitter at The Coaches Net. We look forward to hearing from you. Let us know what you thought about today's episode. And until next time, guys, take care.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of plan, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.